If it's good, we'll tell you. If it's rubbish, we'll tell you. This is Radio Yorkshire, the only place for honest opinions on the greatest game.
I'll say good afternoon to Craig Murdoch and Phil Kaplan. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich.
How were conditions over there on the wrong side of the penalties?
Absolutely perfect. Not an excuse from anybody in the ground, on the pitch, anywhere involved today, Rich. Beautiful summer's Sunday afternoon.
Good stuff. Well, we're going to have a look back on the weekend in rugby league so far, which has been up and down. I've only been to one game this week and it was rubbish. We'll come to that in a moment. But at least on Thursday in Super League, the viewers at home and the listeners to Radio Yorkshire treated to an entertaining game. Wakefield are edged out by Castleford, 25 points to 24, and they continue, the Tigers, to grind out wins again now. It's something they seem to have learned over the last few months.
I think that probably comes from their cup tie with Hull, that they realised that if there was one part of their game that was missing, it was that ability just to stay in a game for long enough to win it whichever way it needed to take it. So they've won with 2 points and 1 point in the last two rounds. That's a sign of a team that just knows how to win, and that's what they're going to need. It's a funny stage of the season. I sniggered when you said you'd only seen one game and it wasn't the greatest. We're almost at that treading water stage, that it's the end of the regular season. We virtually know where the teams will be finishing in terms of the section of the table. There'll be some changes maybe in the positions. And then we start again with almost like a second competition. So I think the standards show, reflecting that at the moment, that, you know, that game was really interesting on Thursday night between Wakefield. Because Wakefield got off to a start where you'd have thought they would have done enough to have won the game, but couldn't find a way to win it. Castleford looked really sluggish in the first 40 minutes, but came back. And you still think there's more that each of these teams have got to give in the games that they've got coming up. And it's a strange part of the season. I'm looking forward to today. I think we've got two teams who play the right style of rugby in the right conditions and something to play for, and that's finishing second. But I'm just not sure at the moment that we're not at that treading water stage of the season.
I just hope we don't get today that the ball was too sweaty and we couldn't keep hold of it.
They're all going to complain about this ball, and then if they change it to another ball manufacturer, they'll complain about that one as well, won't they?
Well, it'll turn from being sweaty to raining. There's always an excuse to drop the ball if you want to find one.
Look, all you can say, Rich, is the same for both sides, isn't it? And generally, you know, if one can handle it better than the other, then they're just grasping at straws, aren't you? You know, unfortunately, I haven't seen Thursday's game. I was on a different planet, I think, than what I am today at Scarborough, where I have never seen rain in my life like it rained for the concert, which I won't mention I was at on Thursday night with my children. But, at the end of the day, I've seen the highlights, and you've just got to look. And, you know, I've seen it so many times where teams, you know, play great, but it's all about 2 points, as Phil so eloquently says, as he always does, you know, it's about winning, and how you get to that winning line in the end, in the bigger picture, is irrelevant, and Cass are doing that very well at the moment.
I would like just to institute some kind of, I don't know, fines for supporters, if we could do it, but certainly everyone else. Stop the criticism of referees, and criticism on Thursday that Luke Gale's drop goal shouldn't have been given because David Fafita was impeded. Dave Fafita went down. He's a 20-stone man. He went down as if he was half that weight. And, you know, he scored a good try in that game and wound up the Cass fans, which was good fun. But there seems to be creeping in more and more and more that we criticise referees after games when they... I think people forget this at times, especially with the TV coverage and especially with having a top ex-official in the commentary box. He then gets the luxury of slow motion replays and time to think about the decision. The referees in the middle don't.
Right all the time either, no. Mind you, as well, Rich.
And the referees in the middle don't have that luxury. They have a split second from one angle to make a decision. And sometimes they'll get it right, sometimes they'll get it wrong. But generally, they make what they think is the right. Well, they do make what they think is the right decision at the time. And I think we need to stop criticising referees all the time, when everyone makes mistakes. Well, we're not going to find magically some referees from somewhere who suddenly don't make any mistakes at all, are we?
I've got two things to say on that, Rich. I think, first of all, I don't think there's more criticism now than there's ever been. I just think there's a bigger platform for people to see it. And that's the major one. The second one is, fans are fanatical, Rich, so it's never your team's fault. It's always somebody else's fault, you know. You know, and rightly so, these fans spend a lot of money going up and down the country supporting their teams in any kind of weather, game in, game out. So it's not their team's fault, it's somebody else's fault, and it's easier for them to rationalise if they can say that. We would have won today if the ref hadn't hadn't have done this. We would have won today if the touch judge hadn't have put his flag up when he was definitely in touch. And if you've gone back to the TV, a lot of these decisions, Rich, like we, you know, certainly I have got no allegiance to any side and I try to call every game down the middle. And sometimes, you know, I've been involved in rugby league since I was 10 years old, so over 30 years now. And some decisions, I don't know. I don't know which way it is to call it. So when you're talking to fanatical fans who've only got eyes for one way, every 50-50 has got to go their way or it's wrong. And I think that's the key. But I think the main one is there's a bigger stage now for people to vent their frustrations where people can see it.
I think it's blame culture and it runs throughout society these days that we don't have tolerance anymore. It's always someone else's fault. But interestingly, this week I got the chance to chat with Bill Harrigan, who's over promoting Tri-Tag Rugby. Spent an interesting hour getting his thoughts on refereeing now compared to when he was the referee. And he said exactly the same as what you've just been saying, that what he would prefer is that the guy on the pitch makes all the decisions and stands or falls by the mistakes he made, because that's the culture that he was brought up in. He actually said, I wanted to own my own mistakes because that's the only way I could improve. He said, but if we're going to do that, the people that we've got to tell are the players, the coaches, but more importantly, the supporters, because there's going to be mistakes. And whilst ever the broadcaster, whoever it is highlighting it in super slow-mo and looking for those mistakes, that's where the referee can't ever win. So the fault lies with us, not the match officials. From what I can vaguely remember about the Wakefield-Castleford game, wasn't there a short kickoff from Castleford when they were behind that Wakefield should have anticipated and gathered but didn't, and that led to the position whereby they ultimately lost the game? I don't think the referee missed the ball from that kickoff.
They never do
something. No.
I'm trying to remember who the referee I saw on Friday was. I can't remember his name, but he was a referee I hadn't seen before. And he gave loads of penalties in the game, but in fairness, the 16 that he gave against Widnes were all for stupid things the Widnes players were doing. So I think sometimes we need to teach the players not to do daft things on the field. But I know I get criticised a lot for... it might be Gareth Huron on Friday at the John Smith anyway. But one thing that the BBC do right on their coverage of rugby league, and I don't know why Sky don't do it, is we hear from the video referee. They do it in Australia, they do it on the Test cricket. We hear the thought process of the video referee or the umpire and know why they're making the decisions they're making, whereas on the TV coverage week in, week out, we get the ex-referee telling us his opinion. It's a bizarre one.
I think that might be to do with the fact that Sky didn't think of it first, so they couldn't possibly ape somebody else's idea.
One thing I do think, and I'm not a referee basher, Rich, I think we've got to change, in my opinion, and I say it every time I'm at a game that's on the TV, sending it up with a decision and being asked to prove it wrong is completely and utterly unfit for purpose, in my opinion. Well, if we're going to have a video ref, sorry, Phil, if we're going to have a video ref, let's use him and let him make the right decision, not prove the one that the referee's made is right or wrong.
How about this one? Another one that came from the mind of Bill Harrigan, who's been involved as a referee himself before the video referee came in, was part of the change into a video referee, has coached referees and now works on Triple M Radio commentating. He said, let the referee make the decision when a try has been given. In the time it takes to walk back and set up for the conversion, you review it. If you review it and the review sees that the referee's made a mistake, you rectify it.
Yeah.
And I thought, what a great compromise that is. Referee has to keep up with the play, has to make the decision, doesn't guess, just says, right, that's a try. And in the time it's, because the technology is so good these days, you've got a minute and a half while the kick's set up, the video referee or the bunker or whoever it is reviews everything and just says, well, hang on a minute, you can't give that as a try. There's been a knock on there. Yeah. Oh, well, we'll have a 20-metre restart instead. What's
all
wrong
good
with
suggestions.
That?
Yeah, and let's not, you know, I watched the other code on Saturday morning as well. Let's not forget we don't go down that route where the video ref's involved in every little action of play and you've got a 3.5-hour time slot to fill on a morning. So, you know, we haven't got it too bad at all, have we?
No, that is very true.
Don't give Mr. Studd the chance to tweet in.
I was at Huddersfield on Friday. It was not a very good game, but Huddersfield won 40-0. And, you know, they were good value for that. Widnes were not very good at all, and they've got to be concerned because they wait for the going there on Friday. But I was looking at the Widnes team and I was thinking Hull KR are obviously top of the championship. They are the league leaders of the championship. They'll probably get a trophy in a couple of weeks or whatever. How many of those Widnes players are getting the Hull KR side at the moment?
That's a really good question, isn't it? And obviously, see a lot of OKR and read a lot of press and, you know, speak to their guys a lot in other roles. But, you know, they're pretty confident that they can go into these middle eights and certainly be competitive. And as you say, and I'm a big believer that, you know, confidence is worth a lot. And I was a little bit worried. I saw Warrington at Wakefield a couple of weeks ago and I was thought, they didn't look a team at all. But obviously they've turned that round with an impressive performance this weekend. But yeah, I think quite a couple of these teams in the Championship will be fancying their chances against some of the Super League sides who, you know, certainly witnessed 40-0 at Huddersfield. You know, and Dennis Betts didn't hold his words, did he, in the press conference after the game? So he's, you know, he's lamented them there. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be some worried people in the Widnes camp on and off the field.
There will, but by the same token, the season doesn't really start for them now until 3 weeks' time. There's nothing that they can really do by knocking themselves out at Huddersfield to get 2 points that's not going to make the slightest bit of difference. Yes, yeah. It might change where they play in the eights, and it would be lovely to get 4 home games rather than 3. But the fact is, Widnes, as a Super League team, playing week in, week out in Super League, with some good players still to come back and some players who've been out injured just feeling their way back in, they should be confident to go and play 4 Championship teams and beat them home or away. So I'm just not sure what these games at the moment would do for a team like Widnes. Yes, you need to put form on the board, but you don't really need to expend all of your energy to pick up 2 points that ultimately don't mean anything.
I think it's one of those, Phil, where hindsight will be a wonderful thing, whereas in 4 weeks' time, Widnes have rested a couple of players who weren't fit.
Absolutely.
Win 4 on the trot and said, wasn't that great management for Dennis Betts?
Yeah.
If they lose those 4, we could say, well, we saw this coming 6 weeks ago, they've lost.
Absolutely. And we would have said, as you just said, the same about Warrington, but the fixture throws them up Lee, who are in similar straits perhaps to Widnes at the moment, that they already knew where they would be playing. They're building into games that, you know, they obviously don't want to be playing him, but they have to now look at that as a separate part of the season, bringing in some new players, getting some injured players back, resting up some players. They've got a relatively ageing squad, travelling back from France as well, that all had to be factored in. All of a sudden, yeah. Warrington score 50 against a Lee team that, for various reasons, are not at the races, and suddenly we think Warrington have solved all the problems.
And you can see that a lot of Warrington in what happened to Leeds last year. There's a lot of similarities between those two clubs.
Absolutely.
Isn't
you start building. As you get to the eights, you get your players back, you get your combinations working. An individual result at Huddersfield is not going to make or break you. What it does do, and obviously we should credit Huddersfield, is it virtually automatically assures them of being in the top eight. And I think that if Warrington lose to Wigan, Huddersfield are safe, or Huddersfield beat Lee, which you would think they would do, then destiny in their own hands. And I think what we should be crediting is it's Huddersfield on a roll and not necessarily Widnes on a downer.
How was Jordan Rankin, Rich? Sorry.
He was okay. He was okay, yeah. Almost scored a try in the first half, but yeah, was solid at fullback. I mean, in fairness to him, he didn't have much work to do. It was, I think, Widnes had about 2 or 3 opportunities, perhaps a couple more than that, in the Huddersfield 20. It was a very strange game where Huddersfield just dominated from start to finish and Widnes didn't really do much in it. And, you know, I guess the negative for Huddersfield this week coming up with the game against Leeds, I don't think Martin Ridyard can play with his loan agreement. And he and Danny Bruff have put together a nice little partnership there at half-back for the Giants. So they'll miss him this week, but I'm sure Lee Gaskell will just slot back in and they'll be seeing that as a game where, as you say, they win that one, they're assured of their place in the top eight. And then the final weekend of fixtures before the split are fairly meaningless by the race for the top four. Wigan have secured their place after their victory in the south of France yesterday without Sean Wayne. 2 wins and a draw now for them in their last 3, so that's a poor run of form's come to an end for them. And an important win for St Helens as well. They both keep up their chances of a place in the top four come the end of the season, with Saints beating Hull. I didn't see that game, but I heard from everyone watching it on TV, on social media, saying it was a bit poor on Friday night.
Yeah, that's the only game I've seen. And what I would say, Rich, is go home and watch it. It's a great game. You'll really, really enjoy it.
Why, has he got insomnia?
No, and on a serious note, I've got a question for you two guys. You mentioned Wigan there, Rich. You look at the bookmakers, who are generally not too far wrong, and still Wigan, who have just made the eight this week, are still second favourites to win the competition. What do you is that the I don't know the competition is where it is, and or is that the bookmakers got it wrong? I can't make my mind up on that.
I think the bookmakers have got the price of Wakefield and St Helens wrong. When Wakefield are 66-1 and St Helens 16s. I think there's a fear with Wigan, isn't there, that they will go on a roll now and players will come back into the squad, and they're coming back into the squad at a right time. Maybe people have their doubts over Hull. Maybe people think Salford, having won last week but lost the three before that, maybe they will wobble. I guess it's who is going to chase down the Tigers, and I guess Wigan, with the experience of doing that last season in winning the grand final, people are going, it could be them again.
I think the issue is who is going to challenge, bearing in mind that three of the teams are involved in Challenge Cup semi-finals, and we don't know how that's going to pan out yet. We're here today, we could be watching a dress rehearsal of the Challenge Cup final, but most people think it's going to be Hull against Wigan. I think the bookmakers are slightly favouring that as well. But whoever wins and loses those semi-finals, it will have an impact. We've seen from previous years that the teams that get to the Challenge Cup final tend to have a dip in form afterwards, win or lose. The teams that lose at the semi-final, it's a psychological downer. They tend to go through a period of win or lose. But I think the bookmakers are looking at Wigan and saying the experience that they've got in their team as current holders of the Super League stands them in some kind of good stead. And the way that the competition is fashioned, that it doesn't matter if Castleford are 100 points ahead by the time it gets to the semi-finals, it's 80 minutes. Who could you imagine going up against them over 80 minutes that would give them a game, that would test them to their limit? Well, with the greatest respect, I don't think St Helens can, even if they get near the top four. Nobody at the moment seems to think Leeds can, because I think seven games on the trot that Castleford have beaten them. Again, there's quite a lot of experience in that Leeds team of knowing how to win those one-off cup games, so wouldn't slightly rule them out. Salford have never been in this position before. People seem to think that Hull are a better bet to retain the Challenge Cup than perhaps go on and get to a grand final. I'm not sure. I think the experience of winning at one trophy gives you something to go on and get the next one. I think the problem for Salford is the depth of their squad. Yeah. They've not been in this position before. It would be great for them if they were going on one track, but they're going on two. They've no reserve grade, they've no academy, two or three injuries, spelling, rotating the squad. I think people genuinely don't think that they're going to have, to the very last week, enough in the tank to claim a prize.
And I think if Salford did get to the Challenge Cup final, it would all eggs in one basket, like Hull did last year.
Absolutely.
Whereas, and if they did do something in the final, then the season could be wrote off. They don't score another point, and it's been a massive success. And I think A, that's Salford, and I think B, Hull have learnt from that from last year, where there's no panic now when Hull lose a couple of games, because they know, after their experiences last year, nothing's won in June and July. You know, Hull were great at that period last year. Yes, they had the magnificence of winning the Challenge Cup and then just switched off, the season was over. You know, I still think Hull, and I still think Leeds, and I'll come to my final point in a minute, Leeds have had too many big games with a lot of this squad who know how to win the big games. Now, people can say Cass all they want. Cass are a country mile, the best side. Are they the best side in the competition? Yeah, they are. Have they won a big game under big pressure at A, Wembley, or B, Old Trafford? Them questions and that box still needs to be ticked. And until you do it, there's always that question, in my opinion.
And that's why the bookies are favouring Wigan, who've done it. That's why St Helens are at short odds, because although they haven't done it recently, they've got a history of it. The club knows how to cope with it. And in some ways, it's interesting watching Leeds today on the basis of the fact that, do they see this as a big game? Is this switch on time? They've got Salford today, they've got Hull next week, then they've got Wigan. Those are the last three regular season games.
And then Hull in the semi.
Then they've got a semi, and then they've got the eights, and then possibly a semi-final. And is this the time of the season where the teams like Wigan and Leeds start kicking into gear?
They usually do, don't they? Annoyingly for everyone else, and win all the trophies. I guess Salford, as you say, if they did get to Wembley, if they did win the Challenge Cup in front of that national TV audience, I guess for the sport, we'd hope, and certainly Dr. Kukoc would hope, that would be the catalyst that kicks off the Salford Red Devils and gets some crowds back at the AJ Bell Stadium, because them, along with Huddersfield to an extent, and Wakefield as well, trying to find those crowds and trying to bring some glory days back to their clubs.
Well, you've just got to look around Earridge today. You know, by this, there's one game in Super League today, which is here. There is no, you know, it's a brilliant venue for rugby league, this. It's old school, you know, it's standing at two ends, you know, six or seven rows on each side, on one side, sorry, 20 on the other. Great compact little stadium, and we've already got one stand that isn't even going to be open. Leeds are going to fill the away end. and we'll still be lucky to get 4,000 fans here. So, you know, you've got to scratch your head and say, Salford fans, what do you want? You know, this is, you're potentially second in the table with a win today. You're in a cup semi-final. You know, there's teams who were crying out for that. And, you know, you've got to, whether you love Dr. Kukash or not, he's given what the fans wanted. He's given them a competitive team at the top end of the table, and yet the fans still aren't coming. What more can he do?
I wonder, Phil, sometimes, is this just... are we, you know, perhaps navel-gazing a bit too much in our sport, in the fact that, you know, I was reading an article on the way in today in the Racing Post about ways that racing can attract more punters. Greyhound stadiums are closing all over the country.
Yeah.
There's another traditional old, I guess, working-class sport that's fallen on hard times, but we've got this dynamic product, and, you know, we look at the other code yesterday with their Lions tour, and you get to think, well, perhaps getting rid of our Lions was a bit of a daft idea, but that mistake's been made. What can be the catalyst for the sport as a whole to kick off a new wave of people watching, I guess?
I guess there's two things. Going back to what Dr. Kukash could do to get more people in here, perhaps not talk about Manchester. You know, this is the first time that he's had a team that fans can relate to, be proud of, come back and support, and yet the PR that's been going around has been, we're going to change the name, which immediately alienates those fans. But that's an issue for Salford. What I would say is there's probably two things on the basis of what you've said. One is, I would use the example of darts and say, if we are comparable to any other sport with our working class background, with the fact that a lot of people outside the sport viewed it as a bit of northern pub culture, rugby league had that same level of attachment to it, but look at darts now. It's taken to big stadia, it's attracted a new audience, there's glamour. You know, they haven't changed the fact that it's three arrows per person into a board that's the same size and the numbers in the same place. They've made it seem something bigger than it is, something that you want to be a part of. We haven't come to terms with that yet. That requires clever marketing and a budget for marketing. I think the other thing is, we are a business that is located in a certain geographical area. And if you take it away from sport and just call it business, it's struggling. Businesses struggle to survive if they can only appeal to the audience they've always appealed to. A lot of our roots have been taken away through no fault of our own. Where we got our players from, where we got our sponsors from, where we got our fans from, housing estates, pubs, clubs, they're not there anymore. Our traditional support base in terms of not only people that played the game, but people who watched the game. So what do? You sit back and watch that get eroded, which there's nothing you can do about. That's a societal issue. Or do you say, look, we are playing rugby league in other places, which has access to new markets? I watched Toronto last night on the telly, a game that we already have seen exactly that same game six or seven times this year. They come out, they score early, they never get out of second gear, they score 60 points, we get excuses as to why the opposition that they're playing can't bring all the players they want, we bull up the fact that they score a try, but we haven't really seen what we would call a sporting contest. So we turn our nose up at it, but 7,000 people turn up and watch it. That would be the second biggest crowd in the Championship if Hull KR are at home. It would be bigger than probably four Super League crowds. We as a sport have to decide what our next 5 years look like. And it's not about should Toronto play in Super League. It's about where are we going as a sport to find new people that will watch it, pay for it, commercially underwrite it, find play. You know, I think the most important thing yesterday with this Toronto game, I know it falls slightly out of the Yorkshire area, but 18-year-old Quinn Naguati came off the bench to play for the Wolfpack. He is the first Canadian player. He's not the Jacks family, who are Canadian by heritage but are Australian. He has come through a system of playing rugby in Canada to be given his debut at professional level. Now, the rugby he's played in Canada, most of it is rugby union. He's played Canadian under-17s, and he's been in the Canadian Rugby Union under-19s. But nobody cares over there. He's just a rugby player. And there was a big thing about he now is the first Canadian to play for the Wolfpack. So to have 7,000 people in the stadium who are unfamiliar with the sport, to have a kid who's come through in that country who has been manufactured by a sport that isn't indigenous to them, isn't that where we should be going or looking at going? I was talking to Willie Poaching on the way in here. Great. A lot of the reasons why Salford are great this year is certainly down to Ian Watson. He's turned a brilliant culture into the dressing room from what was individuals to team. But he's been helped by Martin Gleeson and Willie Poaching. And we were talking about, again, the journey he's been on as a coach. And Francis Cummins as well, he and Willie were a team at one stage. And It's very hard to get a start as a coach. His young son has just been trialled for England under-16s this weekend. But he can't come and play at Salford because Salford don't have an academy. So his father's coaching at Salford. His son can't play at Salford. He's a big Salford fan. But he has to play at another Super League club to get to achieve his ambition of being an England under-16 international. Something is wrong somewhere. We need to define what the criteria are for the spotlight level of the sport that will bring in all the finance and structure our competition accordingly.
Having watched Willie Poaching at Wakefield, I feel very old now. His son's almost on the verge of being a professional rugby league. But I guess if he's got a quarter of the work rate his father had, he's going to be some talent. Just speaking a bit on the Rhinos, and the thing I should say about Toronto, and I watched a bit of the game last night as well, it does seem that everyone there is having fun, enjoying themselves, even if they haven't got a clue what's going on, which is how you get people in the first place and then try and get them hooked on the sport. And I've got a perverse pleasure in looking forward to next week's game against Hemel, because that could be that could be something.
Have you put money on how many tries Liam Kay's going to score?
Not yet, but I'll be searching all week.
But that's us as rugby league in Ulrich, isn't it? That, for me, that answers a lot of problems of what we are. We forget that we're entertainment sometimes, and it's about the product that people are paying their hard-earned money to go and watch. And that's what drives me insane, is the fact that it's all about entertainment, paying your money to watch something. There's so many other things that you can do with your hard-earned money now. You know, you can do you know, going back, as you said, 20 years to when I played, and I played Willie Poaching as well, so I feel old too, is the fact that, you know, there was maybe, you know, you could go to a cinema, but it started at 7 o'clock and it finished at 10. You know what I mean? Whereas now you can go to the cinema at 3 o'clock in the morning or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You can do anything at any time. And we just think we are what we are and we're not changing. And if you want to get with us, you're with us. And if you're not, you're not. And I think we've got to forget that. For me, yes, there's a bit of trouble. But what is the point of having Toronto in a league where they're beating everybody by 80 points? They've beaten teams way above them in the Challenge Cup. If it's better for the sport, if it's better for the revenue, it's better for the bigger picture, get them in at the top level and see what happens.
Well, I think there's another issue as well. I don't want to see players playing in that division who are too good for that division.
Yeah, what's the point?
One of the issues we've got is a dearth of quality. We've been talking about potential restructure of Super League. Might it go back up to 14 clubs? The reason we went down to 12 was because we didn't have enough quality players. We still haven't got enough quality players, but what we have got is Fui Fui Moi Moi and Ryan Briley and Ryan Bailey and
Craig
Liam
Hall.
Kay and Craig Hall playing in the third tier. And next season, if the recruitment is right, the sort of players that Toronto are going to be after, Josh McCrone is going to be one of the highest profile NRL players, currently playing week in, week out, playing for the Wolfpack in the Championship. It's not right. Something is dislocated somewhere. It's all about what is the best we can put on the field. But the other thing is, we only ever preach the converted. That's why, and I understand the reservations that some people would have about the visit of Prince Harry this week. Oh, you know, we're a working class sport. We're probably more Republican than we are Royalist. You know, we don't like people with titles and money that think that they're something. And the truth is that that visit on Thursday gained more publicity for rugby league and the work that rugby league does in the community, because that's what he loved. He didn't come and pledge allegiance to presenting the Challenge Cup at Wembley and a high profile gig. He was genuinely, and you know, Rich, because you were there, he was genuinely interested in talking to people about the work that rugby league can do in deprived communities. And that's what we do well. So sell that. Sell how good the sport is. Sell how good we are at engaging with people. Everything that football has lost. You know, I think Wayne Rooney's transfer is going to commandeer the back page headlines tomorrow. And I don't know what you would think as a football fan, because I'm not one, about the kind of money he gets paid. To me, he seems to be a great. Everything on his CV means he's a legend. But I don't know as a fan how you can correlate your money that you earn and what you pay to follow a club and the wages that the top class people get. What we do is we have a grasp of reality. And I think, to be fair to Prince Harry, he really got that on Thursday. And those are the kind of things we should be pursuing. Those are the qualities that should bring more people to our sport. Come and see the guys play. Make your own mind up. We know it's good. We don't have to tell you it's good. Just come and see it. And if he can get more people to come and watch it, fantastic.
But I think we need to take that a step. I agree with everything you've said there, Phil. I really do. But then we forget, like we're talking about here at Salford, you get, for me, as a 13-year-old boy, I can always remember wanting to play rugby for Whitehaven because that was my hometown team. You know, and I was lucky enough to play 150 games at the top level. And, well, maybe not lucky is the wrong word, but you know what I'm getting at. But my biggest regret in rugby league isn't anything other than Whitehaven never making me an offer when I was 16. Would I have gone? Probably not. But it still irks me now, 20 years later, or 30 years later, that they never offered me a contract. And I speak to the director at the time and I still say, why didn't you do that? Oh, well, you were never going to come. But I said, how do you know if you don't do that?
Absolutely.
And I think we need to have people in this crowd who can relate to people from when they were 16 who, you know, and I think that's a massive problem I don't agree with in Hull, where you've got the City of Hull Academy. You know, anybody who knows anything about Hull, you're red and white, you're black and white, there's no middle ground. And there's going to be, I think, sometime in the future, there will be a hurdle where a guy is, it's Hull's first pick, and they pick a Rovers guy who doesn't want to go there. Now that, I'm sure, will happen later on down the line. It's problems for other people, not me. But I think you need to be able to know the people who are playing in front of you, and
absolutely,
that's how you get integrity at the club, and that's how people come in. And if you haven't got a 16 team, you haven't got a 19s, you haven't got a reserve team, what have these fans got to relate to? And I think that's something we need to address as a sport. We need a criteria which says, if you want to be a Super League club, this is what you must do. And there is too many powerful people at certain clubs who don't want certain things to happen, and it doesn't happen. And that can't be right. It's got to be what's best for the sport, not best for what individual clubs, in my opinion.
Absolutely. And I think if you marry those two together, you look after those who are coming through, and a club that we're at today wouldn't qualify under those criteria because it doesn't have an academy and it doesn't have an under-19s team. With the fact that we have to expand the business, that there is no business in the world at any level that can stand still. It has to conquer new markets. Marks and Spencer's, is, you know, it applies to them as much as anybody. That once we realise that it's a two-pronged attack and we only have a limited amount of jam, so instead of trying to spread it too thinly, pinpoint exactly where... We had this debate on Thursday. If the Rugby League only has a limited amount of resource, that's fine. If it was me, I would spend it all on development officers. I think that's the only thing we need. Everything else can take care of itself. You can subcontract out your commercial department, your ticketing department. You can do what you like with, you know, I don't know, 17 people are full-time referees at the moment. I don't know if that works or not. What I do know is if you've only got a limited amount of money, spend it on development officers. Take the game into community places that don't normally get a taste of the sport. Give them a taste of it, and I think we'll capture them.
Well, which other industry, and I mean this in general, any industry out there doesn't look and say, I've got an apprentice electrician, an apprentice joiner, an apprentice this, whatever, that when he retires, he steps into his shoes. And Salford have done great steps to have a competitive team on the pitch. But where's the next generation coming
Absolutely.
From?
And you, to be fair, you look at Leeds at the moment with Jordan Lilley re-signing, with Jack Walker, a hot prospect, may re-sign. There are other clubs already interested in him, although today will only be his fifth game. And you can see that they're coming off the back of a golden generation, over half of which were guys that had come through the academy together. Isn't that how you run a club, to engage your fans? Isn't that why Leeds are the biggest business, why they've got the most support?
And in the end of the day, Phil, it's cheaper because you don't have to pay somebody to come from somewhere else to come to your club. You've already got that player in your club, so you don't have to pay him as much.
Absolutely.
So for me, it's absolute a no-brainer.
So it's a real contrast today on both sides, on and off the field.
In the Championship, Hull KR top of the table. They play Bradford this afternoon, who are bottom. And of course, we've got Corey Aston now on loan from Leeds, now that John Lilley's back, it seems, in the bosom at Headingley. Speaking of Leeds, and I'll leave you on this point because you've done enough talking for now and you've got more talking to do. But I see the Miners have tweeted they've got a guest this week. The Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator, Darrell Bevell, is with them this week. He's spending his time in his first ever rugby league game this afternoon. And I guess I've said this before, but I think we're closer, in a sense, to American football in the way that game's set up than rugby union at times. And it's good to see Leeds again doing something positive and making links with the club overseas in a sport we can learn a lot from.
Yeah, and I don't think there's just Leeds that do that as well, Phil. I think, Rich. I think, you know, a lot of other clubs are maybe not making it public, but are watching how other sports do it. And, you know, I think if you're not learning, you're standing still. And, you know, why not take a look? And, yes, it's probably more the other way, where the American football guy's coming to look at Leeds, but I'm sure the Leeds...
Not if it's offence.
You know, I'm sure...
That point's been made on Twitter
as
well.
Yes, I thought it might.
I'm sure that Leeds are picking his brains and stuff on how they do stuff, because, you know, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you look at other sports and say... You know, and I think you can look at any other sport and you can pick something, you know, from netball to hockey. I'm sure there's something that's relevant to how you can do something in your sport. And if you can learn something that makes you 1% better, then it's a success in my point of view.
One of the reasons that the Aussies are so dominant in rugby league at the moment goes back to the time of Jack Gibson, who revolutionised the sport by going to American football. I think he was the first, and he went back and came back with the ideas of how you could attack through your defence and all of the things that shaped that great team of 1982 when they came over here. And I can remember this, and Craig's too young, and you obviously weren't even
82
born.
82 are the greatest side there ever was.
But I remember going to Boothbury Park for the first test and standing on the terraces when they fell silent as Australia went something like 30 points up. And it wasn't that we didn't want to applaud them. We just couldn't compute what they were doing. They were playing a different game of rugby league. And the more they went through that tour, the more that they proved that they could play any which way you wanted, but what they had was speed and skill in abundance. And it was all about the support play, and it didn't matter what number you had on your back. We looked at that and went, they have learnt something that we haven't even contemplated yet. Part of that went back to the great Jack Gibson and the teams that he was building at Parramatta, who formed a core of that Australian side. And he went and learnt about what people like Vince Lombardi had done with the Green Bay Packers. I think it's fantastic, and I think it shows a huge amount of respect for rugby league that he's looked at this sport and said, you know, there's not a difference. You've got a certain number of downs. You've then got to get rid of the ball. You've got to have, all right, we have separate attacking teams and defending teams with this thing called transition. And we've got specialist kickers, and, you know, we've got endurance athletes, and we've got guys that just burst with pace. I think he can see a lot of similarities, and he's wise enough to realise that all sports can learn in a professional era off each other. And isn't that the thing about being full-time professional? It won't be what they do on the 80 minutes here. It'll be how do they recover? How do they prepare? How do they analyse their games? What do they do on a Wednesday afternoon when they've finished one game but they haven't yet started another one? What do they do for social bonding? What nutrition do they give their players during the week? When are they allowed to have a McDonald's? Other burgers are available. When are they not allowed to? What nutrition drinks do they have and how often? All of that is comparable between all the top level professional sports, and I think it's a great accolade for league that he would come over and choose to see what we do.
Well, what I understand is what's happened is Pete Carroll, the head coach of Seattle, the Super Bowl winning coach of Seattle, has been watching videos of Leeds games and wants to get some advice on forward passing.
Excellent. So well, Salford would tell you that after the game at Headingley earlier this season.
There you go, you see, all ties up nicely.
And that goes full circle, Rich. We started on bashing referees, and let's finish there as well.
No, it's not the referees' fault Leeds are sneaky. That's all. What can you do? These professional rugby league players trying to hoodwink the poor downtrodden match officials.
I haven't even asked you about what you think of David Fifita's behaviour when he went from hero to villain on Thursday. I think that'll stay for Monday night.
He is what he is. For the time being, Phil Chapman and Craig Murdoch, thank you very much indeed.